Five Pillars of Freedom on Freedom 970 KUFO AM Portland.
Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified, the local show that has a financial advisor, a CPA, and an attorney that to answer your questions here in Portland, Oregon, or Southwest Washington, to answer your questions that you may have that's been keeping you up at night that you may want to ask and not have to write a check for. So free's a good price. I want to introduce my co-host, first of all, Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck and Kevin. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, well, welcome back. We've all been gone a little bit, and like to invite back Kevin Steggy, CPA with the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Good morning again, gentlemen.
Yeah, now, Kevin and I were here last week. Carl was still vacationing and relaxing.
I was, and it was nice. I'm rested and relaxed.
You know, there's nothing better than taking some time off. I know since I took my time off, I feel totally motivated and excited about getting back to work and being here with you guys on a Saturday morning. What a treat.
What could be better than that? Right?
That's right.
No. Except speaking about that, we're going to get to spend a day this coming Friday with Golfing with the Guard.
That's right. That's right. Out at the Heron Lakes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would highly recommend any of you that do listen to this station or any of the Alpha stations, you've probably been hearing about Lars Larson's fundraiser about Golfing with the Guard. And this will be our second year that we've done it. And it's for a very good cause. And having been in the Marine Reserves myself and being part of the Toys for Tot for many, many years, anytime we can do something to help our military people or our veterans, in this case, the Guards and their family, because many of them have been overseas.
Well, in fact, the Guard has been extremely active in all of the conflicts and been stretched really badly. I mean, they've been deployed a lot more than anybody ever expected a guardsman to have to do. So,
you and I know one that still seems to be kind of they bouncing back and forth from being called up all the time, don't they?
Indeed, and spending a lot of time, if not deployed, thinking about how they might get deployed.
Sure. Yeah, and you just think about how hard that is on your family. It can't be easy. Well, I got a special alert that I got yesterday. As our listeners who are regular listeners, if you're a first-time listener, you probably don't know this, but I'm a Harry Dent advisor and have been for some time. In fact, I'm a lifetime Harry Dent advisor. And I go to several meetings a year, usually about every 4 to 6 months. We have economic summits, and we just had one. And he's been saying that the markets are getting overripe and we're going to have an adjustment. And he came out here with a comment, and I'm just going to read this. Just a little note he sent to me. Dear Chuck, of course, he wrote this to me in email, me and about 500 other advisors. But the market has been near vertical the last few weeks. Yes, the S&P 500 has broken the 1600 level, but we believe this increases the odds of a major top this summer. We think there's a high chance of a 4 to 8% correction in the next week or two, likely starting on Monday. There are two strategies for traders and aggressive investors. Buy SH, short S&P 500, and for a bit more kick, buy RWM, pro shares of Russell, short the Russell 2000. Today, near the close, you could also wait for Monday morning and buy SH or RWM if the market is down a bit or up a bit. If there's a sharp decline Monday morning, then wait for a bounce. I tend to favor buying today at the close. And, of course, I didn't get this till late, and they sent it out Florida time, and I get it here on the West Coast, so we're a little bit behind. Gold continues down as we expected and should make an immediate bottom in the days or weeks between 1,250 and 1,300, with the likelihood rally for months that could retest the 1525 or higher. We would be looking to give another buy signal for gold, or GLD is what he recommends, if we break down to a substantial low. I've been working on a deal, and I talked to Carl and Kevin about this. I'm trying to work out a deal to have Harry Dent call our show once a month, and I think I've just about got that arranged. There's several of us, a buddy of mine on the East Coast. In fact, how I got my start in the radio was with a company out of Boston, Massachusetts, called Money Matters. And if you look them up on the web, you'll see Money Matters. And these are a group of guys out of Boston, and they were also having a show every morning, every day, 5 days a week, on another network here in town. And I had went to talk to the station about doing a show, and he had actually referred me to him. I talked to him, and I was doing a coast-to-coast segment for 1 hour every Tuesday and Thursday. And unfortunately, when they got canceled in the West Coast, because I don't know why they were really broadcasting out here anyhow, because they didn't have anybody out here except for me, but I mean, they really didn't have anybody up in Seattle or anything. And so when they quit, that's how I got involved in radio, and Carl and I actually started a show in the afternoon and was doing a show. And now, you know, 4 years later, here we are on Alpha, and we've got Kevin with us now. So doing a local show is a lot of fun, but it is a lot of work. You got to be prepared and you got to be ready. And, you know, if you have a question out there, this is a great opportunity for you to give us a call. I just read an alert on the market that we think some things are going to be changing. And I do have a market update here that I'm going to give that I think you ought to be aware of, because I do think this market has had a big, big run-up, and eventually it's got to simmer down. And, you know, the Dow Jones closed at 15,354.40. It was up 121 points. It was up 0.80, almost a 1% shift. Now, how do we stand when we hit the all-time high on 10,907 to 14,164? Well, we're obviously up. We're up 8.4%, but that's in 5.5 years. So we are up 1.53% per year. I do not think there's many people that would want to have a return on their investment portfolio of 1.53. I just don't think it'd be that exciting. Also, the S&P closed at 1667.47. It was up 17 points. It was up over 1%. And again, where do we stand on the S&P? 10907 at 1565.15? Well, in 5.5 years, we're up 6.54%. That means you'd be up 1.19% per year. Again, not an exciting number. Oil last week was at 95.02. It's at 96.02. Gold closed at 13.58. Last week it was 14.47. And the 10-year bond rate, for those things we look at all the time, last week was 1.90. It edged up a little bit to 0.05 of a point, up to 1.95. And, you know, everybody thinks, how long can we continue having the government put $85 billion a month into the economy and push into the economy and hold the economy up? Well, I got news for you. Japan's been doing it a lot longer than we have. Everybody, you know, a lot of people ask me, how long can we do this? Well, here's the reality. Our debt to GDP right now is about 105%. So we're running over 100% over. We're 5% over our GDP, which is just amazing. However, Japan is about 235%, and they are on like QE11 and R12. They are writing so much money, it's amazing. But they've been in a 20-year recession. We technically, if you talk to economists, they won't say we've been in a long-term recession, but the reality is, if you go back to 2000 until now, it hasn't been real good. In fact, we had the worst decade in 80 years. And one of the things I do want to point out, I have a little chart that shows what would have happened if you bought the S&P index fund You paid no commissions. You paid no fees. You didn't want to get anybody's help. So you went and bought an index fund that mirrored the S&P 500, and you put $100,000 in it at the end of 1999, the start of 2000. That portfolio, just leaving it ride, let it just stay there every year, just leave that alone. What do you think that portfolio was worth at the end of December 31st, 2012? It was worth $97,000.
Down 3%.
Down 3%. That's the reality, the real rate of return. And I've talked on this show a lot about average annual rate of return and real rate of return, and I can tell you right now, anybody that wants to sit down and play mathematics with me, I'll be happy to do it. I will teach you what real rate of return is versus average annual rate of return. And I can tell you, average annual return means nothing. What really matters is what you have in your hand. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more of Investing Simplified. And again, if you want to give us a call, we do have a line open here at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Give us a call if you have a question. We have an attorney in the house, a CPA in the house, and a financial planner in the house. Give us a call. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
We do Investing Simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm. But before I go into Carl's comments, and I'm going to tell you what they are, but we have a caller. But I want to talk about the 10 best tools for the executor or personal representative or trustee. And we'll talk about those a little bit later. But right now we have a caller. Good morning, Carl. Is it Carl?
Carl Nelson.
Yeah, well, Carl, nice to talk to you. I understand you have a question for Kevin here.
Yeah, I got a couple of questions for him. If a person is I work at a hospital, and if a guy wanted to donate some equipment to the hospital, how can he do that and write it off?
Well, that is a good question. Now, this is equipment that you own, is that correct?
Yeah, say if a person out there wanted to donate, say, janitorial equipment like a scrubber mm-hmm. or whatever mm-hmm. to the hospital. How can you write that off?
Okay. Well, that's a great question. Fortunately, it's going to be fairly easy. Non-cash donations, this is going to be very similar to like making a goodwill donation, and a hospital is an acceptable nonprofit charity, I believe. I mean, you have to make sure that the hospital is, because there are, I'm sure, different setups, but most hospitals are set up that way, where you could probably contact their administrative department or something along those lines, and they would get you to the right department where once you donated it, they would give you the correct, a receipt for what you gave, and then you'll have to value what the property was worth, what the fair market value of that equipment was. And that typically becomes the amount of your deduction on your tax return. If it's over $5,000 worth of equipment, you'd probably want to get that appraised beforehand to document the value of the deduction on your tax return.
So if a guy goes out to a janitorial company and buys it, you know, would he still have to get those appraisals you're talking about?
Well, I see what you're saying. So you're buying new equipment and giving it directly across. You probably... Yeah. That's a tough one because the IRS form does seem to indicate that anything over $5,000 would need an appraisal. However, if you are in the business of being a janitor and you are, you know, donating like inventory, although this isn't really inventory, this is actually assets of your business, then you don't need an appraisal. But if you're giving assets of your business, even if you have a receipt that you bought it that day, you probably want to have that looked at to make sure that it's, you know, to document the appraisal, because that would probably have to go in with your tax return.
Okay, I appreciate that, Remission. Can I ask one more question?
Sure, fire away.
Hey, second question would be, and you've talked about this before, if you own a janitorial company and you said most likely when you have a vehicle, it's better to write the mileage off. When does it come in where the company, your sole proprietorship, would it be better to put the car in your name in the name of the company or not?
Really, for a sole proprietorship, it won't matter. It's one and the same. If you own it or if it's in the company's name, you can take mileage and, or take the actual expenses. And so... it's, you know, mileage is great. It's simple. It's easy to keep track of. But sometimes if you're doing a specific planning for a year and you have a heavy income year and you buy a new vehicle over 6,000 pounds in that year, you can take accelerated write-off on that, and you can help manage your income a little better on that.
So would it be who of a guy to lease a vehicle?
You know, the tax implications of that are probably not as important as getting a good deal on the lease. You know, you can write off your lease payments. You know, and it depends if the lease, if you're leasing it to own it or if it's truly just a 3-year lease. I would say avoid the lease if you can, because that's usually not a good financial decision. But if you do lease it, you know, the tax write-offs can be about the same. In other words, you can take mileage on that if you want.
So when you're doing the lease here, to kind of help with the caller here too, the question, if you're doing a lease, you can't write off the mileage and the lease.
Correct. You do one or the other. Yeah.
Do one or the other, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Well, I appreciate all the information. That's kind of good stuff. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Thanks,
thing.
Carl.
Thank you.
Okay, well,
now back to Carl.
And then back to Carl, yes.
Yeah.
The other Carl. Anyway, like I said before, we're going to talk about the best tools for the executor or the personal representative or the trustee. And the reason this comes up is because, you know, one of the things we do when we set up a will or we create a trust is we name someone to be the trustor or the trustee, the trustee or the personal representative or the executor. But a lot of times people don't really think about what they do and what they need to do. And they're about the same, depending on most circumstances. They are about the same as far as what they end up having to do. And so I just thought I put together kind of a list of tools that might be in the toolbox that sort of expresses a little bit about the kinds of skills that a trustor might have to have, and also the tools that they might want to use. And the first one is an alarm clock. And the reason for that is because they're going to have to get up every day and work on this thing, because there's a lot of work to settling an estate. It's not just a sit-down-and-do-nothing job. So it's important that people keep track of their time, but mostly because they're going to have to get up and do some work. The next tool that I thought of is a paper shredder. And the reason you need a paper shredder is because it's undoubtedly going to happen that the personal representative is going to have to go through the paperwork of the decedent. and they're going to have to look at it, and they're going to have to separate it out, and they're going to have to figure out what's important and what to keep. And then, by and large, they're going to need to shred all that other stuff that they don't really need, because if they don't, they open it up as a tool for identity thieves to make a mess of things. So that's an important tool. Then the next thing is a file folder, a set of file folders, because you're going to need some way to organize all of the important papers that you didn't shred. And so I recommend that you put them into different categories, whether, you can use your own system, but, things that are expenses, things that are income, things that are assets, those kinds of things. Make a new file for all of those kinds of categories. And then when paper comes in, where you find paper, you can put it in there and organize it. And that's one of the things you might think about if you're selecting a personal representative or trustee. Do they have those kind of organizational skills? Do they have the skill to discern which are the important papers and which aren't, and how to put them together in a way that's meaningful, and how to put them away in a way that, and follow the instructions of the lawyer. So then the third tool is a dumpster. Now that one's pretty self-evident. How many of you have an absolutely clean garage? Yeah, nobody. And the whole point is that one of the big chores that a personal representative has is they're going to have to clean out a lot of stuff from the decedent's house or building or wherever it is. And that can be an extremely challenging chore. And so a dumpster can be the personal representative's best friend. The other thing they need, the next thing, is a pickup truck, because they need to be able to take the stuff that they don't dump. They need to take that and donate it to the, to the various charities and separate that from the stuff that they are going to dump, and then also separate it from the things that they're going to deliver to individual beneficiaries. You're jumping in here, Chuck.
You go ahead. You're doing great. You're doing great.
Are you having fun yet? Okay. Anyway, and then personal representatives should have some money in the bank. And, their own money in the bank. And here's the reason why, because there are going to be some expenses that they're reimbursable expenses, but they might not get them right away. And so when you're choosing a personal representative, you might want to know about their financial circumstances. Another reason for that is, are they going to be subject to financial temptation? If they're in bad financial straits, you don't want a personal representative who's worried about going into bankruptcy, because they may be tempted. They may get desperate, and they may feel like they got to put their hand in the cookie jar. Not a good thing. So for those reasons, it's good to have a little money in the bank. Then it's really good to have a computer that has an email account. It's important because it's a good way to communicate with the heirs and devisees. It's a good way to communicate with the lawyers and other people that they're going to have to deal with, CPAs and things. And it leaves a really nice trail of what work you've done and who you've contacted and who you've noticed and a whole lot of things. And it's a very useful tool. If you don't have a computer, that's okay. You're going to have to figure out some other way to do it. The old-fashioned letters and faxes and phone calls are just fine. But it's a good idea to kind of keep track of what you're doing. And I just find that most of my clients and certainly we as practitioners find that the email works pretty well. I have a sort of love-hate relationship with email, but nonetheless, it does provide a useful tool. The hate part is when I come in the morning after a long vacation and I've got like 3,000 emails.
One thing I've heard a lot about on the news lately is one of the things you want to remember is emails are forever.
Yes, they are.
Anything you put in an email can be retrieved and virtually forever.
Well, and you never want – my kind of rule is you never want to put anything in an email that you would, feel uncomfortable about having published in the newspaper the next day. And a lot of people do that. It's kind of like, people put stuff on Facebook they shouldn't either. But one of the things I can tell you is we've had a number of lawsuits where the smoking gun, the thing that really nailed the case down, was an email. And at the time it was probably, in the heat of battle, you fire off this email, and boy, does it come back to bite people. So be cautious about your email, but they are a useful tool if they're used well and intelligently.
I'm kind of wondering, with all the hundreds and thousands of emails we're going to be going through with the IRS, if that isn't going to be the smoking gun.
Sure could be. Sure could be.
Well, we touched on in a prior show about the IRS being able to get your emails without a warrant as part of a direct audit, and it did just recently come through that if they are going to proceed with emails, they are going to need to get a warrant, and that they have backed off from directly requiring that. So that's a good move for taxpayers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially with what's going on right now on the investigation. Absolutely.
So I have a couple more tools. The eighth tool is, surprisingly, a good attorney. And you need a good attorney if you're doing a probate, even a short, small estate, because there are things that there are rules that apply that You have to remember that if the personal representative screws it up, the personal representative pays. They're personally responsible for doing this. Now, it can be a minefield for the unwilling or unthoughtful person. So you need to have an attorney who's familiar with the probate process and wills and trusts and things like that. And one who communicates well and one who will talk to you and explain things in a way that allows you to carry out your business. The more work that you can do in the estate as opposed to the attorney, the less the attorney will have to do and the less it will cost the estate for that purpose. So nonetheless, there are certain things that typically are more efficiently and more economically done by the attorney just simply because he's done them before. So those are things that you can work out on an individual basis with the attorney that you select. Number nine is a big easy chair because you're going to be tired and you need to go home and sit for a while after it's done. And finally, the last tool you really need, and probably you need it from the very beginning, is a sense of humor. Because there are times, when you have to deal with all this paper, you have to deal with all this junk, you may have to deal with the emotions and disgruntlement of heirs and devisees, and you're going to also have to deal with attorneys. So you guys need a sense of humor to be a good personal representative.
Carl, this is Hall of Fame material that you're talking about here. This is good stuff. I can't tell you, every single one of these things I think are very valuable. And, I always tell my clients when that last tax return goes out and everything's wrapped up and all they have is a little bit of holdback, take yourself out to a good dinner.
Absolutely.
There is so much more involved than people realize, and that's just the nature of the
Biggest problem, and Carl, you and I face this all the time, and Kevin, you not so much because you got deadlines. They have to meet their tax requirements or they're going to get in trouble. But Carl and I have a real procrastination problem, not with ourselves, but getting clients to make those final decisions because they are tough. And I kind of thought about you when I did my seminar this last week. I did two seminars on Social Security, and one of my clients I've been trying to get together with and do some planning. I was hoping him and his wife were going to come to the seminar, and he came, and I said, "Well, where's your wife?" And he said, "The problem is, She doesn't want to admit that she's 62 and going to be eligible for Social Security. She doesn't want to face it, so she's going to procrastinate hearing about it." And isn't that the way it is? I mean,
well, it really
that's
is.
How we are.
I know of a client that the reason they haven't come in is because a husband can't get the wife to come in because she doesn't want to think about the remote possibility of dying. Just doesn't want to do it. Just doesn't want to have anything to do with it. And
yeah, last time I heard that was a definite possibility.
Well, yeah. I mean, remote in the sense of perhaps time. I mean, I kind of understand that. And when I first started doing this kind of practice, I found myself being just a little bit squeamish about talking about, dying and what happens when you die and all that kind of stuff. But anymore, I've become not squeamish at all, but really matter of fact about it because it's going to happen one way or another, and so kind of talking around it isn't going to make it go
well,
away.
Well, there are those two things we all have: death and taxes.
That's for sure.
I think there's an old adage that says, "Teach us to number our days so that we can apply our hearts to wisdom."
Ah, amen.
Ooh, wow.
Oh, I like it.
Well, that's deep thoughts in the morning, isn't it?
That's right.
That's great. Well, Carl, have you got any additional things about that you'd want to say, except that people who need to to review their estate plan. And if they haven't got an estate plan, they need to get a hold of you
or an attorney
or somebody
and
get one put together.
Yeah, I think so. And it's one of those things that it's less painful than going to the dentist, really.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not fair to some of my dentist friends. I don't know. They, you know, it's not really. It's just one of those things that isn't high on the list, you know. If you got, you know, go play golf or, you know, go see the lawyer, it's, you know, probably not as fun.
You know, it's kind of funny because one of the clients I was talking to was trying to get together to go see you to do their trust, and one of the things invariably they all come up and I developed a new line this last week. I think you're going to like this. He said to me, he said, you know, well, what is this going to cost us? You know, how much is it going to cost? And I said, well, I don't tell you what the attorney's going to charge you, but I can tell you this. From my experience of being 40 years in this business, it's going to cost you a heck of a lot more if you don't do it than if you do it.
Well, that often is the case. And most, I don't know about all lawyers, but most lawyers, I think, are generally upfront about what their cost or what an estimate might be. Now, one of the things that we do run into is that, you know, it's kind of like any other sort of project. If things change or if there are a whole lot of revisions or, you know, the client changes their mind a lot, well, that certainly increases the cost to a certain extent. But usually what I tell my clients, a lot of times people will call and they'll say, I want an estimate of what it's going to cost. And I really can't in good faith give them one over the phone because I don't know until I get a chance to talk to them. What I tell them is, look, you come in, you tell me your story, and then I will give you, after I have a sense of what it is we're going to be doing for you, then I can give you a fairly accurate estimate. And if you really feel comfortable and uncomfortable, then I'll give you a cap on it, and if that's what you want. So
the whole point of estate planning is to save money. So it's not what does it cost up front, but what is the whole plan going to save you down the road as a whole? And if it's not going to save you, then you don't implement.
It's kind of like everybody knows they need to spend the money or do it themselves and change your oil about every 3,000 miles. If you don't do it, there is something that's going to happen. It's going to be called a blown engine, and it is going to happen. So you better change your oil, and you better do preventive maintenance, or that car is going to break. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with Kevin Stange, the tax investigator. So if you got a call, you got a question, give us a call. We have an open line at 503-417-7626, 503-417-7626. Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stage, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stage.
And we're back with Investing Simplified here in Portland, Oregon. Give us a call at 503-417-7626. And we've got an adventure on our hands here with the tax investigator this time. We've got a lot of ground to cover. Obviously, we can't do a tax segment without talking about current events and what's going on with the IRS right now. We'll try to stay partially impartial, if that is possible. And but give us a call with your tax questions or legal or financial advice questions. This show is wide open, even though we have a bit of a format that we follow. But call us anytime with any thoughts that are on your mind. 503-417-7626. We do have a line open. So starting off here, of course, we've got to talk about the big shakeup in the IRS and the problems that are going on with some of the political weeding out, if you will, of organizations that are putting in applications for nonprofit status, but that have been scrutinized based on their potential political leanings. And of course, this has cost the acting IRS commissioner his job, and I suppose a few more heads are going to be rolling. But what's interesting is a 501c4 organization is allowed, and 501c3s too, which is the majority of nonprofits, they're allowed to comment on political issues, but they cannot directly financially support a candidate or an issue. And so that's the differentiation here that we need to make sure that that we understand. So, for example, you go to church and they want to take a stance against abortion. They can say something like that, but they cannot directly support a pro-life position with financial aid or a candidate or something along those lines. And so what apparently has been happening at the IRS is people that appear to be supporting certain political positions, they got weeded out for further scrutiny, further audit, delays in their nonprofit status, and of course that can't be with the IRS. The government is not allowed to censor people's positions and their First Amendment rights. Interestingly, the Billy Graham Association sent a letter to the Obama administration after the Billy Graham Association came out in favor of Mitt Romney in vocal support, but not financial support. The Billy Graham Association went under intense audit and scrutiny of all of their activities, and they sent a letter to the Obama administration saying they believed this occurred because of their political position in favor of Mitt Romney. So this is, interestingly, we don't have a, Al Shapiro or Jesse Jackson have not undergone these. So there appears to be some sort of problem here. And fortunately, it should be weeded out. Well, we have a call. Ron, are you on the line?
Hey. See, I have a friend that has $800,000 in an IRA, and he wants to take the money out and invest it in a real estate adventure. Is there some way that he can keep that in an IRA and not have to pay the taxes?
Yes, there is. There are some self-directed IRAs. However, the thing I would point out, and as Carl and I have discussed on the show numerous times, along with Kevin, one of the problems in an IRA, depending on how old your friend is, how close are they to 70 and a half?
He's about 85.
Whoa, he's 85 and he still has that much in his IRA?
Yeah.
Wow, he's been taking his RMDs, hasn't he?
I guess so.
Well, because at 70 and a half, by law, you've got to take your required minimum distribution. And historically, I've been doing this about 40 years, and IRAs have been around since, I think, about 1970 or 75. And a normal person with an IRA actually starts decreasing their principal somewhere around 80 years of age. So he would have, at 70 and a half, he would have had to have had probably close to $1 million in his IRA. Now, that's conceivable. It's very conceivable to have done that, 14, 15 years ago. But I would say at his age, at this point in time, I think it would be very costly, because if he went and bought a piece of property, unless he bought a small piece of property, He's going to have to do accounting on it, and that's one of the problems. You have to do an assessment every year on the valuation of your IRA portfolio to the IRS. And if you do real estate or gold or some other kind of abstract thing, you have to have an appraisal for the government on the value of that IRA. Particularly if you're 70 and a half, Kevin, you have to report the value at the end of December 31st of the previous year. That's what you take your required minimum distribution on. So whoever would do that with an 85-year-old would be looking at a lot of bookkeeping, a lot of taxation requirements.
Exactly. And while it is possible, it's difficult. You need to find somebody who can manage that and be the trustee for it. Any gains that are created in the IRA, if he makes a fair amount of money on that, it's still going to be taxed as ordinary income, and any losses are non-deductible. So there's some huge considerations.
I mean, I'd have to look at his total value of his estate, but I can't see any financial reason or investment reason to do that at 85.
He may be better to take a distribution and directly invest in real estate outside of the IRA, but that would take some significant planning. Looking at sounds to me like he's got a pretty complex plan.
Well, and realistically, I think that at 85, most people really are a little bit more concerned with liquidity because they're going to need to spend some money, so I would be real skeptical about going into real estate for long-term investment. There are some headaches to owning real estate too. So it just seems to me that I would really think long and hard before ever suggesting that to especially someone who's 85.
Yeah, I'd certainly recommend against it. And I would advise you to meet with his tax person, whoever does his income tax, and talk about the ramifications on it because that's not a good move, I don't think, for that 85-year-old.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate your call. And now we're going to be back to Kevin and talking about the IRS and taxes.
Well, we'll let that topic drop, and we'll go on to some interesting, this piggytails with you, Carl, and what you've just mentioned. This is some interesting deductions or positions that have been taken. And before we get into that, we've got some calls coming in. Sounds real good.
We've got Ray on the phone who's got a question about estate planning.
Hi, Ray. Ray?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, how are you?
Good. Hey, I was wondering, before the break you were talking about estates and stuff, and you're going to be better off or less worse off if you get an estate plan in order, and I just wanted to know which person would you start with?
Oh, you mean as far as where to start? Like with a financial advisor or accountant or a lawyer, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for the whole estate plan, for doing everything. It's like you got to talk to the tax guy and you got to talk to the lawyer and you got to talk to the investment guy. Which guy do you start with?
Well, I guess it depends in part on your own individual circumstance, but I think it's important first of all to get your finances together because the estate planning lawyer is going to want to know what you got. And if you're going to, and quite frankly, if you're going to make a huge number of changes all of a sudden, right after you've done your estate plan, that might not be the best thing to do, because one of the things we tend to do is to transfer assets into trusts. I mean, that's one of the techniques that we use. And so if you're going to be changing a lot of that, it just might make it a little bit more complicated for everybody. But if you have your portfolio pretty well established, then when we do that, it's just a little bit more simplified. So I guess I would probably start making sure your assets were in shape.
Typically, it's good to have if your purpose is for administration and that type of a thing, the attorney is a good place to start, or the financial advisor, because you'll put all your assets together, take it into them. The attorney is going to draw up the will or the trust document, consult the tax advisor regarding the tax implications, that type of a thing. If you have all that lined out and you're looking at hey, maybe I've gone over the $1 million for Oregon and you just need a tax analysis, then I could be a good place to start on that. But I would say typically the financial advisor or the attorney to do a complete review is a good place to start.
Yeah, and, I know that I've had at least one client here recently where the assets were pretty well established as to what the person or the family had, but there were some concerns over the health of the individual, and so we got together and it was the tax person who brought this up to them and said, hey, you know, you don't have any estate planning going on here, and you're going into, you know, you've got some health issues going on. And so what happened was the CPA and I got together and chatted about it, and then we realized that based on the nature of the estate, we couldn't do what we really wanted to do before the health issues might be a problem. So we did sort of a stopgap, some interim tax planning, I guess you might say, and got some documents together really quickly. And then later on, we'll go forward and make that a more robust estate plan. So there are a lot of different things that come into play, as, you know, health being certainly a very critical issue.
I think the real important part, Ray, is that you really need to have all three to work together to help you do a plan and to make sure everything gets taken care of. And what I really caution people on is there are some of my fellow financial planners who also do living trust and things like that are legal work. And I really advise against that. I always advise my clients to go with an attorney if you're going to do legal work. If you're going to go do tax work, you see a CPA. And if you're going to do financial planning work, you talk to an advisor. I think it's important to have all three of them working together for you on your team, and realize, and this is one of the things I tell my clients all the time, we work for you. It's not the other way around. It's your money. You hire and fire us. We need to be doing the right thing for you, and it shouldn't be a problem for us to get together to make sure your stuff is all coordinated and put together.
Okay.
Great. Thanks for calling, Ray. We appreciate it. Listen, we still have an open line. If you want to give us a call, and I believe we do have another caller on the line.
Yeah, it looks like Rob is on the line. Rob, are you with us?
Yes. Hi. Yes, I am. Good morning. And I want to thank you for taking the time to do the show. I really appreciate it. I have a question about RMDs. We're about 5 years away, and I was looking at my computer, and it looks like if we had to do the RMD today, it would be probably a couple $1,000s in state and federal tax. And looking down the road several years from now, if there's only one of us, the RMD is still going to be the same. The tax is going to be much, much higher because of, you know, one exemption and that sort of thing. And I'm wondering, would it be smart to convert now?
Convert to a Roth, you mean?
Yeah, to convert at least part of our money to a Roth, because we do have a higher standard deduction and there's two exemptions and, you know, the threshold for taxing Social Security changes when there's only one person.
Right. Well, you know, I think you're on the right track there. The only benefit to a traditional IRA is deferring your income into a lower tax bracket, theoretically lower tax bracket. I actually recommended to a client just the other week who is in their mid-30s. They have a bunch of kids. I actually recommended a distribution subject to the 10% penalty because they had no income tax, federal or state. They were only going to pay the 10% penalty. They were never going to be in a lower bracket. And it seems crazy, but that's sometimes a good thing to do. So I think definitely looking at your income, and if you have leeway to utilize deductions, especially if you're in the 0% or the 10%. That's,
we are.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's a perfect time. And that's one of the key things we look at, because some people, when they retire, are going to have a higher income sometimes than when they're working or just before they retire. And that is a great time to push some of that money into a Roth IRA and take advantage of it. And it shortens the break-even time, because there is a break-even because you're paying the taxes. But if you're not paying any taxes, what's, you know?
Yeah, don't push yourself. Yeah. Don't push yourself up into the 25% bracket, but you know, and take, you know, $300,000 out. But
get close.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
I looked at ours, and if we were to do it, we our RMD is going to be about $13,000, and with our low tax bracket, we probably have to pay about $2,000 in federal and state income tax. And then I ran the on the computer. If there are only one of us, it looked like it would be like $5,000 state and federal tax.
That very well could be the case.
So that's why I thought RMD converting to a Roth now might make some sense. Go ahead and pay the tax. But I wanted to ask you guys, since you're a lot smarter on this than I am.
Well, absolutely. And if you got 5 years to do it in, you got some time to spread that out over 5 years. It's a great time to be doing it.
Well, Rob,
thank you very much.
Thank you. It sounds like you're right on top of that. That is very good planning, and that's what you don't want to do is just get locked into something and thinking you have to do something. You're right on top of that. Very good.
Flexibility.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Great call there. Good question. We're going to take a quick break and come back with the Knowledge Trust. You're listening to Investing Simplified. We do have an open line. Give us a call if you have a question. Thank you very much.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Hey, this is great. What a great segue into the Knowledge Trust. And let's talk about having $600 million. The heck with $1 million, Powerball. And I know there's Powerball fever out there. Everybody's buying Powerball tickets. Somebody's going to win that money. Your odds are 1 in 170 million. But like they say, somebody's going to win it. So a buck or two doesn't hurt to take a risk on it. And, you know, this is the first week I can remember in a long, long time I've had people actually say in our presentation and talking, they've actually asked me, what would you do? What would you do if you won the $600 million? And I said, the first thing I would do is I would get a hold of the Knowledge Trust. Carl Jepson, an attorney, and Kevin Stege, a CPA, and Chuck Price, a financial fee-based advisor, and I would lay out a strategy before I went public, because everybody and their dog is going to be wanting money from you if you win. You are going to be the favorite uncle of the second or third or fourth cousin that you didn't even know existed. And I'm telling you, they're going to come out of the woodwork. But you know...
You know, if it were me, I think I would be having Carl test the limits of the right to privacy and try to establish some sort of trust and, I don't know, maybe even take it to court or something, because, boy, I'd like my privacy on something like that.
Well, we could try that out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it would be fun, and I'm sure the hourly rate would be adjusted appropriately for the amount of assets you're protecting, right?
No.
No, I'm just joking. But, you know, the reality is, Kevin, you're right. I mean, I can tell you that the biggest fear that people who have a lot of money is that people find out they have a lot of money. And if you just think about when you hear about the paparazzi, you know, taking a peek on Jolie and Brad Pitt, you know, you can understand why they don't have any privacy. those people, of course, they're in acne, but even some very, very wealthy people. I mean, you look at the fortress that Bill Gates has. I mean, can you imagine how many guards that guy must have around his family? Because your fears are totally different than the average person's fears. You got to worry about people getting kidnapped, your family members. I mean, it's great to have that money, but I'll tell you what, the fears of having that sometimes can be pretty fierce.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah, I think we probably don't realize the it looks like we have a caller on the line here. Jim, are you on the line?
Jim, are you there? We only got 3 minutes, so we're going to have to...
I'll go quickly. Hi, Carl Jepsen. Greetings from the Barrack Bums in Salem, Oregon.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey,
Hi, Jim.
Hello, Jeff.
How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. My wife is coming into roughly $1 million, and it's from the sale of a property. And it's a concern of mine. There's a lot of depreciation, et cetera, over the years that they've used it as a rental. How can we avoid just excessive taxation on that?
Well, she's receiving it as part of an inheritance?
No, they're selling a property.
Well, they're selling the property. Well,
yes.
I think that, unfortunately, the basis is going to be what the basis is, and the tax is going to be what the tax... The only way, I guess, you... And I don't know whether there's time enough to do it, and this is more in Kevin's bailiwick, but I suppose there might be the possibility of a 1031 exchange, but which would be replacing it with another or several properties that are of a like kind. But
once you harvest the cash, you've pretty well locked in. If the transaction has occurred, you've locked in your capital gains. And frankly, paying capital gains rates right now is not too bad of a thing, because those could be going away fairly soon. We hope not.
What is capital gains now? Is it 15?
15 federal, and then Oregon taxes at 9% or a little more. Yeah.
You're talking 24. It's way lower than ordinary income.
Okay, and 3 minutes is up. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Carl. Good hearing you on Saturday.
Hey, Jim, it's nice to hear from you. It's been you and I go back a long ways.
We'd like to thank everybody that called into Investing Simplified. We'll be back next week, your local knowledge trust, to answer your questions. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Guys, have a great week.
Bryce Financial Group, wealth management.
Let's face it, the rules of retirement have changed. What we were told to do just a few years ago now seems like a pipe dream. Hi, this is Michael Burnett for Chuck Price, owner of Price Financial Group Wealth Management. You know the drill. Be a loyal employee. You'll get a pension. Your home will be worth 10 to 20 times what you paid for it when you retire. So how's that working for you? Call Chuck Price right now. He's located right here in Portland. Featured expert on Investing Simplified on AM 970. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or close to retiring, and he focuses on protection of principal and tax strategies to minimize your taxes. Call right now and get Chuck's retirement report. It's packed full of information on generating more income during retirement, how to leave more to your heirs, and so much more. 503-253-3000. Chuck Price, Price Financial Group Wealth Management, on the web at pfgwm.com.